Coming up next, Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides with your favorite host, or certainly one of the best, Bathrobe Spear, Robert Norris. It's 2 hours of civil rights for the poor, civil rights for the nearly poor, civil rights for the wannabe poor, civil rights for the probably gonna be poor, and civil rights for anybody and everybody actually happens to be on the streets, Santa Cruz, or anywhere else in this country, or possibly even abroad. We do a two-hour show every week, Monday and Friday, and you're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, here in Santa Cruz. We're going to be having some interviews today, one from the National Conference on Law and Poverty, or actually the National Law Conference on Poverty and Homelessness, that's it, as well as the continuation of an interview with Catnip Kate Wells, local civil rights attorney who is covering the City Hall sleepers protest. Additionally, we hope to have guest interviews with Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, who's writing up the story of the City Hall sleepers protest for Street Spirit, an Oakland-based homeless newspaper that is sold on the streets there. And others are writing up the story for the Street Sheet, San Francisco-based homeless newspaper. If you have any comments on this show, grab a pencil, because we have a phone number you can call to criticize, supplement, augment, or diminish, whatever you will, what you hear on the air, plus make suggestions. That number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF coincidentally stands for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the name of the organization that I work with. My name is Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris, so called because bathrobes are what I wear in protest demonstrations when I support the rights of homeless people, particularly the right to sleep on the streets, which is apparently a major contested right in many California cities, and particularly here in Santa Cruz, where we have a very onerous anti-homeless sleeping ban and a long vigil protest to try to change that ban, headed by Dragon Sard Dan Hopkins, Pepper Tongue Pat Ring. Actually, he's not supposed to be around the protest, but his spirit remains there. Numerous other people who've arrived in the last month who deserve all kinds of credit, who I can't give because I've been away. But I am back. I am bad. I am here. And I wish we had a telephone line, because you are out there, and you should also be here as well, speaking your voice on these issues. The benefit on Friday came and went. Mark Levy, a folk singer of great imagination and fine rhyming skills, I've been enjoying his work for a decade, was there, and he's going to be at the next benefit, which will be coming up in September. I don't think we made any money at that benefit, frankly. I think we probably lost money, but sometimes you got to take a chance, and sometimes you don't make it, and you got to keep trying, because the issue is right. And the issue does not go away. That's the right to sleep without being harassed by the police, without being lied about by the mayor. I guess you can't really stop the mayor from lying. Without being enjoined by the courts, and without being brutalized, spat upon, and otherwise abused by passersby who are then supported by the mayor and their behavior. That apparently happened about a week and a half ago, and Pepper Tongue Pat was hauled off to the pokey. Well, let's have a little music. I'm going to be interspersing the show with lots of selections from Mark Levy, who did some great singing on Friday night. And I want to take off my hat to those who did the benefit, including Sandria Roth, Pat Ring, Larry Hildes, Sunshine, others again, since I was not at the center of it, but others who helped to put this thing together. It's really important that we do this, and you learn from what didn't happen and what did happen, and you improve. The City Hall sleepers protest has always been short on organization and money and long on commitment, and that's the real need, is commitment, and the commitment is still there. You can throw lots of money at things, and it all gets grabbed and disappears, but the commitment produces people sleeping out every night. I believe they're now in night, what, 144, is that correct? Today's the 21st. 143 of the City Hall sleepers protest. And perhaps, who knows, we might even have some City Hall sleepers or some River Street refugees dropping in on us. That would be nice. This is an invitation to anyone at the protest to come on down to the station and join us, talk about what's been going on. And We also have an interview with Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, recorded last week. We're going to play, although you probably heard Dan at his show on Friday and had some more recent updated stuff. So without any further ado, let's hear Mark Levy from his new album, Born to Be Wired.
What's gotten into our men in blue that's making them overreact? Is there something about wearing that badge that they do that makes them just want to attack? Or could it be rookies who prove overzealous? Perhaps we should ask, why this rough stuff now, fellas? Up cops at the donut shops, drinking hot coffee and soda pops, watching for motorists running stops so we can go practice karate chops. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Up against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. You can bet your bottom dollar on the donuts I've eaten that your black butt is gonna get a beating. So go ahead, sue, if you think we're mistreating, and we'll take it up at the next Klan meeting. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. So watch your step, you criminal slime, 'cause we're on the prowl, getting tough on crime. Get your cameras ready, get your lights online, 'cause we're all pumped up for prime time. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme.
And that's Mark Levy. Born to Be Wired, his latest album, just released a week ago on cassette and tape. Or actually, cassette is tape. CD and cassette. It's got, looks like, 20 different songs. I first heard this song, which is called the LAPD theme, at a demonstration which had thousands of people at it in San Francisco, where they arrested, I guess, 900 of us and held us, well, I got away, but they held Linda the Lark Edwards, Santa Cruz activist, for hours and hours, and she actually got, I believe, a financial settlement thanks to the ACLU. This was in 1992 when the jury returned this bogus verdict, the Simi Valley jury, against the beaters, the police officer beaters of Rodney King, and there was massive rioting and great extensive demonstrating in San Francisco. And then the sheriff of San Francisco, who was Hongisto, actually he was the police chief, not the sheriff, essentially ignored the supervisors suspending the martial law that had gone on for, I guess, a week or so, and continued to arrest and harass. And He was eventually fired because he stole a bunch of newspapers. An alternative newspaper did a satire of him. I guess it was a gay newspaper, and they had a picture of him in drag with a huge, fondling a nightstick as though it were a penis. And it was too much for the police chief, and he had cops confiscate the papers. And I guess it's okay to confiscate demonstrators, but it's not okay to confiscate newspapers. I mean, newspapers, after all, are backed by money, whereas demonstrators are, well, what is it, the chemicals in the human body add up to, what, $1.98 worth of chemicals, if you could ever remove them. I think that's what I read in one story once. So, we got some additional interviews today that I didn't mention to you. We have Catherine Byers, a councilwoman who's been on the city council since she was appointed in 1989 in the wake of the Mo Reisch scandal. Mo, you may remember, was a candidate. We probably don't remember, but I remember. He was one of the many scam progressives who got on the council promising to concern himself with the rights of homeless people, which was a big issue in the elections of 1988. That's when they began arresting people for serving free food en masse here in Santa Cruz, something that I've had some personal experience with. I just got back from a month in jail for doing that in San Francisco, but there were literally dozens of people arrested here in Santa Cruz. Two served extensive time in jail, Brian Flanagan Staley and Sandra Loringer. At that time, they were convicted by jury trials. And in this election, as I said, Mo Reisch ran. His campaign was handled by Sherry Connable, who now is a homeless activist. And I guess Sherry also handled one of Catherine's campaigns later on. She's a woman of many talents. I've had many critical things to say about her, and no doubt will in the future as well. I've called her Schmoozin' Sherry and kind of mocked her and Barbara Riverwoman's plan to send homeless people to the state parks. Actually, it's a good idea. The only trouble is it was so small and so little support was being given to the City Hall sleepers protest, which really was the main protest in town. And you may not agree with everything the City Hall Sleepers protest does, but they're there, they're doing it, and I think they deserve support. And when, you know, the respectables pull back and, you know, want to preserve their credibility with people like Scott Kennedy, I just, I lose my lunch. That's pretty much the story here. So, Sherry has been on this program, at least in terms of she's spoken and on tape through this program. Barbara Riverwoman has been on the air here, and she's invited to reappear. In fact, almost anybody who has an opinion on this issue is really welcome to get that opinion out. I really do solicit opinions, and you can get on this show by calling 423-4833. 423-4833. That's my phone number and the phone number of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And, of course, there is a more general number you can call if you want to comment on any of the shows, and you can leave a two-minute message. And that number is 427-4523. And you can react to shows, and your reactions will be broadcast. I'm not quite sure when, but that's what this cardboard pizza container, which is posted on the wall and written on, says. So I've got to believe it. And there it is. Well, what is upcoming aside from our Byers interview today? Well, tomorrow... Actually, tonight, there's a meeting of the Revolutionary Coalition, but I don't know if I'm supposed to announce that, so I'm going to kind of hold back on that. And I hope Just Man Jim Costner, who is the fearless head of that coalition, or certainly one of the many heads, it's a hydra-headed coalition, will let me know soon. The coalition, I think, meets once a week, and they are interested in your participation. You can certainly give them a call at 421-9250. They've taken as their main priority locally the end of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which... no doubt everyone has heard more than enough about and will hear more about as well. And they meet on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. If you want to come to that meeting, give a call to that number, and they'll let you know where to go, so to speak, to get to the meeting. Tomorrow at 3:30 on Tuesday, the 22nd of July, there is, of course, the last city council meeting for the summer because the council goes on vacation in August. Could be an important meeting. You may remember Skidmark's Bob of Just Kiddin', and also Copwatch, and of course a radio broadcaster in his own right, as well as a proud father and a vicious scumbag, was on the radio on my show, guess on Friday, and he gave you a kind of an update on what we are likely to see coming into the city council at 3:30 tomorrow, namely some controversy around the farmers market, which the DTA, the Downtown Business Association — I never knew what T stood for, by the way. If anybody knows, please let me know immediately. But that's what it is. The DTA, the Downtown Business Association, has decided to cut these suckers loose. They've had enough of people giving away political pamphlets, sharing free food, and wandering around without their Gucci's. You know, I mean, this is really becoming an affront to the merchants, and so they've decided they can't take it anymore. Hell no. And they're going to go their own way. And the question is, will Mike Rotkin and the city council — Rotkin is the mayor, of course — hang tough on their promise to continue to support the farmers market? Now, Byers mentions in her interview some information about this, which is okay, I mean, interesting. I call Catherine Birdseed Byers, and you will find out why, the reason I call her Birdseed Byers. Not behind her back, by the way. She knows I call her Birdseed Byers, because she is so, dare I say, timid, or let's say selective in the causes she chooses to champion. We've been trying to get her to introduce amendments to the sleeping ban for literally a decade, and we can't do it because she feels it will not succeed. I voice my opinion on council members who take this stance and don't believe in somehow trying to lead opinion rather than waiting till the whole thing is a done deal. I mean, she may have learned in scan quarters that that's the way to proceed, but frankly, that ain't the way to proceed as far as I'm concerned. Maybe I'm just naive about the politics locally. In any case, the election season coming up should provide us with lots of opportunity for debate around these issues. I see by this morning's Santa Cruz Urinal, that is to say Sentinel, our local county newspaper, or that's what they call it anyway, a newspaper. It's printed on newspaper and so forth, and probably the worst newspaper in the state for a city of this size, but there it is. They have reported that there are yet more candidates. I guess the council candidate field has widened to 15. We got 15 council candidates, including the ever-popular Rodent, and David Mitten Silva, who should be in later today, a Green Party activist, a man who has taken a bold stand supporting rights for the homeless, a man who walked up the city council chambers in a blanket to dramatize and visually demonstrate his solidarity with homeless people whose blankets were being stolen and whose blankets are still being held in the police lockup without any reason except to harass the people who are at the protest vigil, and also people who aren't. Backpacks and blankets and bedding and other things are taken from folks who are simply trying to hide under the bridges, get a bit of shelter in a vacant lot or near an abandoned building. It's the usual attack on homeless people that has not altered or abated in Santa Cruz really in any way. I mean, in a way you can say it's down from 1988, when it was more fashionable among the police department, and certainly down from 1982, when they were beating homeless people up with more regularity and actually had the code blue, which was a phrase used by the police actually internally to indicate they were going to go beat up some homeless person, and six cops were dismissed from the force, but the DA couldn't get it together to secure a conviction of these people. Thank you, Art Denner. Anyway, I tend to range a little far afield here. That's City Council tomorrow at 3:30. Farmers market issues are coming up. So come on down if you want to see the farmers market continue. Who knows? Bring some tomatoes. Maybe you can provide the City Council with a taste of public opinion. Then on the 22nd of July, well, that's today, my goodness. Hey, I see here on the wall, I want to remind you that tonight, as well as Jim Costner's Revolutionary Coalition meeting, there's a big networking party on the beach in Santa Cruz. That's the 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. potluck. That's at Live Oak Beach, bonfire, music and fun, family and friends, enjoy the summer. Folk musicians, poets, and political speeches are welcome. Meet in back of the Crow's Nest Restaurant. That's tonight, 7th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Bring food to share, potluck style, soda munchies, firewood, chairs, blankets, dress warmly for wind and sundown. Instruments and instrumentalists are welcome. Members of the Santa Cruz Alliance, Green Party, and grassroots activists will be among the many wonderful progressive groups joining our unique beach party. Folks are coming from San Francisco, Politics of Meaning, Palo Alto, Project Incorporations, Law and Democracy, Santa Clara, Watsonville, and Monterey. Well, I'm going to be there, and I will be walking around, probably in a bathrobe, pontificating on this and that. So, hey, you can actually come and touch me if you wish. You can touch my robe. I mean, think of that. So bring bagels, bring yourselves to this big networking party on the beach in Santa Cruz tonight, 7 o'clock, 7th Avenue in Santa Cruz. In case you want more information or in case you missed the party and still want to do some networking, you can contact Mike Whitney at 469-4930, 469-4930. And I also see that he seems to have a show on KZSC on Wednesday from 5 to 6. So in case you want to tune in on Whitty's show, not Whitney. Sorry about that, Mike. Mike Whitty, and the KZSC number for call-in is 459-4036, and that's 5 to 6 in the afternoon on Wednesday, radio station KZSC. So again, tonight, show up at 7 o'clock and bring your firewood and whatever else you want to bring, some warm clothing, I would imagine. It gets cold even here in the summer. And bring your notebooks and your pencils so we can all exchange phone numbers and email addresses and information and political slogans and song lyrics, you name it. I mean, we can do it. That's what we need. We've got election coming up. We've got three incumbents, two of whom are very bad and one of whom is very timid. We're talking Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, that's the bad. And then we have Catherine Byers, we're about to hear an interview on, the timid. We can do better, folks. We can do better. I don't want to say vote against Catherine, but hey, if there are better candidates, we should vote for them. No question about it. Byers is a perennial favorite, a shoe-in. She doesn't need your votes. People who need your votes are people like David Mitten Silva, who is a long shot. But we need a long shot. We need somebody with some real guts on the city council. Real guts. Real He-Man guts. Some serious ovaries is what we need here on that council. Also on Saturday, and I repeated this on Friday, and I don't know if anybody went. I didn't hear that anybody went, but every Saturday at 11 a.m. in San Jose, the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance meets at the First Christian Church, which is 80 North 1st Street. Now, this is 80 North 1st Street. This is a group that is really pretty well organized and well funded, too. They got 20 or 30 people usually show up to these meetings. They engage in housing takeovers. They've had a sleep in, as they put it, in a church, a kind of a Gandhi-esque purification, networking kind of sleep-in that happened in early July, which I read you about on the last show. And if you want more information, you can give them a call at 345-2353. That's the Community Homeless Alliance in San Jose, 345-2353. It's headed by people like Scallywag Scott Wagers and No-Nonsense Nancy Nichols. Actually, No-Nonsense is Nancy is a name given to a Santa Barbara activist who I knew several years ago, Nancy McCready, but let's let Nancy Nichols share that name for the moment. Anyway, hey, San Jose Community Homeless Alliance meets every Saturday, 11 a.m., First Christian Church, 80 North 1st Street. We know our own churches have been told not to put homeless people up on their grounds. Thank you, Mayor Mike Rotkin. That was the Holy Cross Church's evict them or face zoning commission poo-poo. So it looks like the major feces that's coming down is shit from city council on those who want to help the homeless. And the major rats, of course, are the individuals orchestrating this anti-homeless campaign. And one of them's names starts with an R. Mayor Rotkin, I believe, is his name. And he is running for re-election for term number 4. Set your sights on this, folks. And I'm not talking militia. I'm talking politics here. Get this man out of office and put somebody in who is real on the homeless issue. Well, let's turn now to one of our council members, and I hope this tape is good. My batteries have been running low, and you know what that means. But let's give it a try. I think we may get lucky here. This is an interview with Councilwoman Catherine Byers, actually a council member. Most of the people on the council are women. We have, I guess, a 5-2 majority. In fact, the two biggest duds on the council are men, Rotkin and Kennedy. I suppose you might say Mary Beth Campbell is a dud, but I don't even put her in the category of being judged as to whether she's a dud or not. But let's leave my denunciations to the side. Here's Catherine Beyer speaking in her own voice, or actually answering questions from me earlier this morning. Ah, well, there we have it. The case of the interview that wasn't. Maybe we can doctor that sucker interview and beef it up. And what I will do is I will try to tell you... Boy, that's sad. I will try to tell you what was said this morning. I wanted to find out from Catherine kind of what had been going on in the last month and what issues she felt were upcoming and whether she felt her kind of lukewarm but distinctly pro-homeless stance at city council was going to cost her votes.
Freeze, mother sticker, this motherfucker!
Oh, no! It's
yeah.
It's Ann Fry!
Yeah!
No!
I'm the lawyer here to screw you over. Welcome back, Robert.
Oh, well, thank you, Ed. This is an unexpected pleasure, I must say.
Same for me when I tuned in, and lo and behold, here's Robert back with us.
Oh, boy.
Among the living.
To go away for a month, and then everybody is friendly again. I love it. All factions are forgotten.
Actually, I have an ulterior motive in breaking in on you here. I just wanted to make sure that networking party,
you know, I just announced it.
You did.
But why don't you say a little more about it if you know about it? Who is this Michael Whitty, anyway?
Michael Whitty. You haven't met Michael Whitty?
I don't know if I have.
They call him Dr. Detroit. He's a labor leader from Detroit who also teaches labor law and other similar subjects over at Santa Clara University on a temporary basis. He's a great unifier, and that's what the left, the radicals, need.
You got it.
Is a unifier, and bring everybody together, and that's his theory, and he's going to have a party tonight to try to do that. Live Oak Beach, I guess, right behind the Crow's Nest. 7 o'clock, so bring your firewood, your food, your booze, your musical instruments, and your good thoughts and your good ideas.
What about all your dope? How about your pot?
My
Mr.
pot?
Mr. Medical Marijuana Guy.
Oh, yeah, well, don't have any. Never have.
Of course not.
I would deny any...
involvement in that particular the herb? Or?
Yeah, well, actually, that's pretty sad because the Court of Appeals rejected Scott Hager's.
Why don't you have you talked about that on air? You probably have, because I know you do have a show. We're talking, of course, to Ed Fry, attorney who's covered a number of civil rights cases in Santa Cruz, one of the few attorneys who seems willing to take such cases, and has also been instrumental in fighting for the rights of medical marijuana, though there have been some controversies and internal factional problems around that issue, which we won't go into at this time. However, what happened in the Scott Hager case, if you haven't already discussed it, or have you already discussed it?
I have discussed it on my show, but just briefly what happened was that...
You want to sit down?
No, that's okay. That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
What happened was the trial court here in Santa Cruz, Judge Yontz, rejected the case, even though we alleged that that marijuana is the best and safest medicine for him. He needs it for his spasticity, because he's quadriplegic and he gets these spasms that are horrible. So the judge here rejected it. So we took it to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals hearing was held in May here in Santa Cruz, and they rejected it. And they didn't even accept our statement of facts, and which they were supposed to do since it was on a demur to the complaint. They didn't accept our statement of facts that marijuana is safe and effective. They decided the case was controlled by this case called People versus Privatera, which was decided back in the 70s, with regard to the drug Laetril for use for cancer patients. That was definitely a drug of unproven efficacy. But I cited to the court, you know, our own legislature's statement that marijuana has been proven safe and effective by the National Academy of Sciences, and they disregarded also the fact that two medical doctors put in affidavits in Scott's case, one of them his own personal physician, saying it's the safest and best medicine available to him, and that the alternative legal pharmaceuticals are dangerous and could even lead to coma or death. They disregarded all that, and so that's the end of it.
Theoretically, you could appeal again, but it wouldn't be worth the time and trouble, or there's no appealable issue, or what's the story?
Well, we could have gone to the California Supreme Court, which, of course, is dominated by the appointees of Governor Wilson, but
some
nobody. It would have cost $200, and nobody had that kind of money to come up with. I mean, the Santa Cruz citizens didn't want to pay for it, so...
You were donating your time.
Oh, yeah. But they didn't want to come up with an additional... They had paid the original costs involved and appealing it and all that, but they didn't want to go to the Supreme Court with it. I think they're just waiting now for the ballot measure in November, which, unless we get our act together, is not going to win either, because we know that the pharmaceutical companies, liquor lobbies, the timber lobbies, the tobacco interests, I mean, you name it, they're all going to be fighting this foot-in-the-door approach to marijuana, which is the medical marijuana initiative on the November ballot. So they're going to be pouring billions of dollars against it, and unless we, you know, really come up with a strong counter campaign, it isn't going to succeed either.
Have any ads come out on this, around this election issue that you've seen, or by these large interest groups?
No, I think it's a little too early, but I think we should be able to see them soon. I don't watch TV. I don't have a TV, so I don't know. I
mean, shocking.
Well, I know. I'm way out of line, but I'll try to find one. But.
Is this issue going to be discussed tonight at this pot party on the beach?
It's not a pot party.
It's not a pot party. It's actually a networking party with a pots of soup. Soup, as we know, is also illegal in certain areas of the country, but that's how it goes. What about other issues? I mean, while I was in jail, somebody sent me a subscription to the Santa Cruz Sentinel. They wanted to torture me further. It wasn't bad enough that Neil Coonerty would write a letter denouncing me to the judge. That's the bookshop Santa Cruz owner and former mayor. It's not bad enough that Scott Kennedy would write me a letter in jail telling me that I had to mend my ways, which I'm going to read that letter on the air today, by the way, and I'll share that with all of you. Actually, in a way, I commend Scott for writing a letter, for expressing his candid opinion. I always am glad, and he's particularly glad, because Scott has refused to come on the air to talk about issues with me, demanding instead some sort of apology and retraction based on what for me is an extremely obscure, I'm not even sure what it is he wants or retracted. I've invited him to come on and denounce me publicly at length, and I can discuss the issue with him, but that still hasn't happened. But anyway, the Sentinel arrived, or the urinal as I call it, 4 days late, and I saw some interesting articles, and I thought, you know, I need a legal eagle to help me get through some of this debris that's on the Sentinel. For instance, around July 4th, there was the case of this guy who shot some other guy on the Hill. And some bizarre turn of events, Judge Yonts actually rejected the DA-led grand jury indictment. Now, what was that all about? I know this isn't a homeless issue per se, but the courts are so prone to accept anything DA Art Danner says as sort of holy writ that I found this an unusual state of affairs. What was your reading of this issue?
You know, I didn't look at that closely. I know that they're going to recharge the guy anyway, so his ruling is pretty much irrelevant to the ultimate result. There was some kind of a technical defect in the way they presented the case to the grand jury.
Yonts claimed that Danner had not presented exculpatory evidence, namely evidence that showed that the man was innocent, and instead just went on with his, you know, hanging jury tactics. You of course have run against a DAR Danner twice. Do you have any clear sense of how he deals with grand juries? I mean, I guess that's done privately anyway. You can't really hear what he's done, but have you ever talked to grand jury members or had any or his staff to see how he presents cases before grand juries and so forth?
No, that's all wrapped up in a very medieval kind of secrecy. I mean, they can't talk about anything that comes before them, so they're not willing to. I mean, and they're all the grand jury members in general, from my limited experience, are very much intimidated by Danner, very much in his pocket. I've had a complaint on file against Danner with them since October of 1994, and they haven't done a damn thing with it yet. I mean, they're very un-grand jury-like. If you think that a grand jury ought to have some balls to investigate and really,
or at least some ovaries.
Yeah, well, yeah, one or the other. And so, you know, I'm not real surprised that Danner would have this approach to them, which would be manipulative. I mean,
well, I can't say he does. I mean, I got to admit, I come with a bias against Uncle Art. I come with a bias in favor of a lot of the issues you've raised and your criticisms of Danner around the Catherine Gardner case. And
In general, it's the overall duty of a prosecutor to seek justice, not convictions per se, but justice. In other words, that the truth be known best, and then whether that means that the guy or the defendant is acquitted or convicted. But Danner doesn't see it that way. He sees his job as getting convictions. So that generally that's what he does. He goes in only with the evidence that shows guilt and not something that would show acquittal evidence. So anyway...
Now, is that a statement made on the basis of an examination of his presentations? Probably not, because it's confidential. I mean, you and I probably both will both say that because that's our inclination, but in fact, we have no evidence one way or the other on this issue, right?
Other than general considerations of having watched him for, 10 years.
And plus the conviction rate for things like drug offenses, I understand, is twice that of neighboring counties. Is that accurate?
I haven't studied that in detail to make any authoritative statement on that one.
Well, Danner has been a particular target of yours, at least in terms of your concern about the issues around the drug war locally, as well as other prosecutorial misconduct. In fact, you filed a lawsuit to recover funds that Danner was able to... $40,000 that he spent on Catherine Gardner when she was in an interim period, supposedly suspended, but actually getting paid because of a cocaine use scandal that was hanging over the district attorney's office during the election period of 1994, when revelation of that scandal would have been rather deleterious to the DA's campaign, similar perhaps to the... drunk driving stuff, not so called, of course, by the courts, that happened, the two-martini crash. Was it a two-martini or a three-martini crash? I don't know.
Actually, it was gin and tonic, and it was 1.5, according to his deposition.
1.5 gin and tonic crash, according to Art's deposition back in 1987, when he sideswiped a woman, and she was taken in for drug and alcohol testing, and he was... nary a word was said about Uncle Art. You sued to get the $40,000 back in the Gardner case and you initially got what looked like potentially a fair hearing, a jury trial, and then it apparently got smothered in legal paper at the Court of Appeals level. Is that right?
Well, no, we didn't have a jury trial per se. What happened was that before we could have a jury trial, he made a motion for summary judgment, and Judge Stevens denied that, saying no, he violated the local regulations. I mean, it was clear what he did. He sent the woman home and kept paying her secretly, telling everybody else, including the auditor's office who writes the paychecks, that this woman is on duty working and should get regular pay. That's what the words he used, regular pay. So he wanted to keep it quiet until after the election. It was obvious that was what he was doing. The county regulations allowed him to pay her only for 5 days. Well, he paid her for 4 months. While she sat at home and did nothing. So the taxpayers have gotten ripped off in a big, big way. And so we filed suit. Like I say, the first motion was for a motion for summary judgment, which he made. Judge Stevens denied that. Danner then went to hired a private lawyer. Up to then, the county council had been representing him. He hired a private lawyer from Palo Alto, from a big firm there. The private lawyer disqualified Judge Stevens and made a second motion for summary judgment in front of Judge Attic, and at the same time made a petition with the Court of Appeals to stop the trial court from proceeding to trial. And that was just heard. We had an oral hearing on that after briefs and everything were filed. We had an oral hearing July the 11th, and they haven't issued their opinion or decision yet, but it looks very clear like there's a fix in for Danner, because they were very hostile to me and very friendly to Danner's people.
Three-judge court?
Three-judge court, at least two of whom are former prosecutors. It looks pretty sad. So we're going to have to go to the Supremes on this one.
This is taking up massive amounts of your time, Ed, and you're not getting paid anything for it. Is it worth the time, considering all the other people that are scratching at your door looking for your legal help?
Well, there is a possibility that I would get, if I win the case, I would get an attorney fee under the Private Attorney General statute, so-called. There's a statute that says that if you... bring a lawsuit and it establishes an important victory and precedent for the people, then you're entitled to a legal fee, and in which case it would be a nice, fat legal fee. Otherwise, I lose.
So you're in it for the money. That's what you're telling me, Ed.
Well, that plus to show the people what Danner's really like. So
it's sour grapes and booty of war.
Yeah, I ought to get a life, you know.
Well, it all comes out here.
But I'll tell you
what, radios.
Danner did follow my advice after he told me to get a life.
Yeah.
I told him to get a lawyer, and he did.
Hey. He likes you, Ed.
Yeah, listen, I got
to
run.
Listen, thank you very much, and I guess we should listen to your show tomorrow, Tuesday at...
1 o'clock.
At 1 o'clock. That's, yeah. You'll be listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that'll be Attorney Ed for any particular subject you're going to be bringing up.
I never plan these things in advance, or I just am constitutionally incapable of doing that. But I do want folks to remember to come tonight at 7 o'clock at the beach near Crow's Nest Restaurant for that Radicals
Seventh Avenue
convention party. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'll be there with my bagel bag.
Thanks, Robert.
All right, thank you, Ed. And that was Attorney Ed Frye, and of course you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. The home of the tapes that run too slow, and so we can't play the interviews we want to. I was describing what was on the interview with Catherine Byers. I am really going to try to attempt to have this interview buffed up for Friday. Maybe we can find some way to get an electronic genius like the inexhaustible Xavier to make it audible. That would be wonderful, but I don't have the equipment for it at the moment. What Byers said is that the farmers market issue will indeed be coming up tomorrow, and there will be some kind of compromise. And this made me a little nervous. I mean, what do you need to compromise? When somebody runs in with a bigoted, unrealistic position, are you suddenly going to start compromising with them simply because they've got a bunch of businesses downtown? No, only if their position is the right one. In my opinion, that's the way to proceed, particularly if you're a so-called liberal who makes a lot of brouhaha about the rights of poor people. Catherine, of course, positions herself, so she's supposedly concerned with the rights of everyone, but she said there were going to be some restrictions put upon the farmers market, some requirements about policing the area and so forth, which makes me a little nervous, but who knows? I think people need to come tomorrow, 3:30, City Council, 809 Center Street, or give a call to Catherine Byers at 426-6108. That's her home phone. She receives calls there, or at her City Council hotline number, 429-3550, or any of the other council members also take calls at that number, 429-3550, 3550. And that's a 24-hour number. But you want to talk to them today, you probably should call. Well, you can call any time. They probably won't get back to you until after the council meeting at this point, but you might get lucky, and you certainly can get through a message to them before the council meeting. They will be picking up those messages. If you call before, like, say, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, they'll get those messages. It may be that the Social Services Subcommittee is meeting on Tuesday morning. It usually does. That's the subcommittee that throws money at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. You may remember that's the group that closed down the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, broke its contract with campers, closed its meetings to homeless activists like myself and Dan Hopkins, refused to allow tape recording or video recording, so concerned was it with its public image, is now raising money for this Trailers Not Trolls Community House project and keeping its field locked so that people have no legal place to go at night. And poor Father Marini is overwhelmed with homeless people at Holy Cross Church, and of course he's been told to forget it by our socialist mayor, Mike Rotkin. Well, it's fun to be back in Santa Cruz. Same old stuff, but it always makes me smile. Of course, I don't have to sleep outside. I guess that's why it makes me smile. Well, sometimes it feels like I'm sleeping outside, I'll tell you. I have a kind of a cold, windy little room that got broken into while I was gone. Sad. But that happens to everybody, I guess. It happens to a lot of us. Particularly happens to people who live outdoors. They're constantly losing their stuff, constantly getting ripped off, and it's just an endless struggle. I'd like to have people maybe do a whole show devoted to that one aspect, rip-offs, if you're a homeless person, both from official agencies and from people you thought were your friends and from impersonal agencies that just do it just because they're running around, you know, looking for something to do. And, of course, police out to harass you and Parks and Rec Rangers out to make the pogo nip safe for Celia Scott's upper-middle-class West Side friends. I don't want to seem too harsh on Celia Scott, by the way. Celia is probably the best council member. She actually has tried to take the lead where Catherine Byers frequently does not. But it's so little that's done in terms of what needs to be done or what could be done or what we've asked her to do that it's just depressing. And I'm accused of criticizing people and alienating allies by making these kinds of criticisms, and I'm not trying to do that at all. But I think that you have to consider the realities of what goes on day to day, and you have to consider the powers of council members to make changes in this area in terms of the power of public opinion, the power of the pulpit, the power of the vote that they have, the power of access to city staff. All these things are really important and really significant. And when it's not used, or when it's only used intermittently or half-heartedly or in a piecemeal manner, I think we need to talk about that. And I frankly leave the diplomacy to others. And I hope they're successful in getting council members to deal with these issues. So far, they have not been, really. Nor have I, for that matter. Buyer's interview. The buyer's interview today, she said the farmer's market is going to be up for discussion tomorrow, and some kind of conditions are going to be put on the farmer's market. People who want to run their own scene. She said she didn't think she'd been hurt by her sort of occasional support for homeless rights. Including today, when I tried to say, look, how about asking the city staff to research the impact of changes by changing the ban, by changing sections A, B, striking A, B, and changing C of Municipal Code 6.36.010. And what that means is Section A says no sleeping, Section B says no covering up with blankets, and Section C actually talks about camping and encampments. What we want is, as an interim measure at least, if not, you know, some sort of compromise while we're waiting for significant things like Yokoyama's long-promised affordable housing, is decriminalization in public, the right to be a human being without being attacked by, arrested by, cited by, having your face shown by in the light of a flashlight at midnight by the police. And what changing that municipal code would mean that people could sleep at night. They couldn't sleep blocking the sidewalk. They couldn't sleep defecating and urinating. They couldn't sleep littering. Maybe you could even make it so they wouldn't sleep in certain residential or downtown areas. That could be included. But they could sleep somewhere. And this is something that we cannot get even the most elementary agreement on with these totally bogus alleged leftist liberals on the council, the progressives, the people who are running away, or kidnapping the student vote, kidnapping the liberal vote, and then just spitting in the face of people who are concerned with basic rights for the poor. I am referring to Rotkin, Kennedy, Yokoyama, Matthews. Byers doesn't spit in your face. She just sort of wrings her hands and walks off into the distance. And Celia Scott makes, you know, a few quiet motions that are, they're more than gestures, but they're less than wholehearted, ongoing action. So, at the current time, I'm feeling we should vote for Scott isn't up for election, and Byers really doesn't need your vote, as I said earlier in the show, because she's always the top vote getter. You know, I mean, she's very, very popular. Let's worry about getting rid of Rotkin. Let's worry about getting rid of Cynthia Matthews. And let's worry about getting two more seats on the city council from people who really make some sense on homeless issues, on rent control issues, on civil rights issues, on making the downtown truly a multicultural community. That's what we want here in Santa Cruz. We want to lead the country, lead the state, lead the county. We don't want to be, you know, bringing up the rear, waiting for somebody else to make it okay for people to survive before we'll say it's okay for people to survive, which is Mayor Rotkin's most recent or constantly repeated comment. Oh, every other city deprives the homeless of their civil rights, therefore it's fine if we do that too. We don't want everybody coming here looking for civil rights. Now, he doesn't say that. He talks about the right to sleep, but certainly if you can't sleep, your other civil rights aren't worth too much, you know. We're not talking about paid, you know, bed and board at Daryl Darling's, you know, fancy bed and board house over on, you know, Westcliff Drive. We're talking about the right to lay down your head where you have to, somewhere in Santa Cruz. Somewhere. Not anywhere, not everywhere, somewhere. So, we need to get this issue going at the elections, and Byers somehow feels that she's doing fine and she wants to do some more, and she seemed pretty optimistic about her chances. But she wasn't interested in even asking the staff to look into this question of modifying the sleeping ban. As I said, sections A, B, and C could be struck and or modified. And even if she, I'm not even asking her to bring up the issue for a vote. I'm just saying bring it, ask the staff to examine it. She said, well, you know, she wrung her hands a bit. And then I said, Catherine, are you saying no? Just say no, you know. And she said, okay, no. Fine. That's what she says. She says no. So for another month and a half, you can thank Catherine Byers for not having the staff even begin an investigation of these conditions, because she has the power to make this happen. She proposes it. I don't think the council is going to oppose it. And even if it does, that gives us more ammunition against those people, Rotkin and Matthews, who vote to even not even consider the possibility of reasonable change. So call up Byers, 426-6108. Tell her, I want you at tomorrow's council meeting to ask the staff to investigate the potential impact of changing sections A, B, and C of the City Council, of the City Halls, of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which is Municipal Code Ordinance 6.36. Again, write this down if you're listening to this show and you want to put in a productive phone call. Catherine Byers, 426-6108. And say, Catherine, I don't insist you vote for this measure. I don't insist you bring it up for a vote. I know you're afraid you don't have the votes, but you certainly have the votes to have the staff do a report. And you certainly owe that to the people who are getting hassled outside now, and the people who've spent 144 days, 143 days out in front of City Hall getting trashed and abused and enjoined and jailed and had their bedding stolen by the people that you're schmoozing with on the city council, you know, by a police force that uses their authority. So, in other words, ask her to ask the staff to change, to consider what the impact would be of changing sections A, B, and C of 6.36.010, the city sleeping ban. And if you want more, if you want to get those details more directly from me, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll give you the information to ask. When she hears from me, she can dismiss it as, you know, oh, Robert Norse, the crazy renegade radical rich kid guy who comes back into town and, you know, rampages around. When it comes from a number of other voices, she cannot so easily dismiss it. And it's a project that almost everyone agrees on. That ban needs to be changed. That ban needs to be modified. And I need a drink here. Hang on. So what else did she talk about? Well, she, you know, often she doesn't have too much to say, but she did take the time to talk, and that's something I will credit Catherine with. She does take the time to talk to you if you call her up. So you're likely to get her ear, if only briefly, and get her attention and get into a dialogue with her. So again, 426-6108. Ah, well, you are listening to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. It's 96.3 FM. And let's hear a little more Mark Levy. Here's a song called Can We Get Along? Can We Get Along?
Listening to some sounds, I hear the verdict like a shot, the gavel striking down. What had that jury seen or heard to be of such a mind? And if a picture's worth a thousand words, then all 12 must be blind. Oh, people, can we get along? This is not the way to change. It's gotta stop, it's wrong. And when the smoke burns down to ash and the broken glass is swept, when the blood bloodstained concrete streets are washed, and the bitter tears are wept in anger and in pain. The questions still remain. Are we a government of laws or a government of men? With liberty and justice for whom and when? How long must people struggle to earn a decent life? In and out of trouble, poverty and strife. Years of insult and neglect, now how can people down and left behind with no jobs and no hope? And oh, people, can we get along? This is not the way to change. It's got to stop, it's wrong. And when the smoke burns down to ash and the broken glass is swept, when the blood-stained concrete streets are washed and the bitter tears are wept in anger and in pain, the questions still remain. Are we a government of laws or a government of men? With liberty and justice for whom and when? Of rage of every race and every age, to loot and burn, to shoot and kill, and leave 50 people cold and still. The city of the angels consumed in hell like fury, while poor white cops are walking free as they jail that judge and jury. And get along, this is not the way to change. It's got to stop, it's wrong. And when the smoke burns down to ash and the broken glass is swept, when the blood-stained concrete streets are washed and the bitter tears are wept in anger and in pain, the questions still remain. Are we a government of laws or a government of men? With liberty and justice for whom and when? With liberty and justice for whom and when? With liberty and justice for whom and when? Oh, 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 oh.
Was Mark Levy again, Born to be Wired, his latest album. If you want to get a copy of this album, Mark is a local guy. He's up in Big Basin, is where he kind of hangs his hat and hangs his banjo and guitar. You can contact New Clear Records up in Felton, California. That's New Clear Records, and the phone number is 338-7283. That's 338-7283. New Clear Records, Post Office Box 559, Felton, California, 338-7283. Born to be Wired, Mark's latest album. Good stuff. I'm going to also play a few songs from one of his earlier albums, which I think are really inspired. He's got a great one called Take Off Your Clothes from the mid-80s, which may be a little before your time, but perhaps not before my time, maybe even after my time. Well, shortly we're going to hear an interview that we began last week, I should say on Friday, by Kate Wells, Catnip Kate, attorney here for numerous causes. She was fighting for the rights of people to sleep at night in the early 90s after Grinning Ray Gruneich, a longtime veteran of that campaign, kind of fell by the wayside because of legal problems. And she's done 90% of her work free, and she's always on the edge of bankruptcy and always running around trying to do other kinds of work to survive, like taxi driving and who knows what else. She's worth 100 other attorneys in terms of her commitment, in terms of her willingness to come on out. And I really wish that any attorneys listening might take a page from her book. I mean, we could do wonderful things with a couple of good attorneys in this town, and the city council and the city attorney and the police department would pay a lot more attention to the really legitimate concerns that are raised if attorneys paid some more attention to homeless people being harassed and political activists being suppressed by the city here in Santa Cruz. I've also kind of compiled a few articles. I got this huge stack of newspapers to go through since I got back last week, and I found a couple of interesting stories, most of them gloomy, a few kind of funny and optimistic in a way. For instance, there's a story in the Friday's San Jose Mercury News, but Border Patrol confirms it releases drunken suspects. And it runs like this: the U.S. Border Patrol releases alleged illegal immigrants if they are drunk, a spokesman for the agency said. If they are inebriated to where they can't focus or make a clear thought, if we can't determine alienage, then we release them, said spokesman Ron Henley. The unwritten policy came to light Sunday when Ramona Sheriff's deputies dropped off an alleged illegal immigrant at a Border Patrol checkpoint in Temecula, and Border Patrol agents released him because he was drunk. Border Patrol agents rely on interviews to determine whether a person is in the country legally. The alleged illegal immigrants have to answer questions about themselves, their parents, their country of origin, and how they came to the United States. If they're too drunk or high to be interviewed, they are released. Republican lawmaker Ron Packard of Oceanside said that the policy is ineffective. It's a policy that almost encourages them to show up drunk, Packard said Wednesday from his office on Capitol Hill. It's a bad policy on its face. Bill Strasburger, a spokesman for Immigration and Naturalization Service Commissioner Doris Messner, said agents need to have better communication with migrants. If we had a deaf mute, we'd have to treat him the same way, Strasburger said. The bottom line is that we have to determine the alienage. We can't make the assumption of whether they're here legally or illegally. If we must err, let's err on the side of an individual's rights. Republican Brian Bilbray, whose district stretches from La Jolla to the U.S.-Mexican border, said, "Where does it stop? Can you imagine if we applied this policy to the rest of the criminal justice system? A burglar let go because he was drunk when arrested, or a murderer released because he was on heroin when he was caught?" The U.S. Border Patrol recently has come under criticism from federal and state officials. Earlier this week, union leaders testified before a state subcommittee on allegations that agents drop off injured migrants at local hospitals so the federal government doesn't have to pay for their care. That's an AP story from San Diego in the Friday San Jose Mercury News of July 19th, entitled Border Patrol Confirms It Releases Drunken Suspects. Well, a word to the wise should be sufficient. All you new immigrants who are listening out there, you probably don't understand what I'm saying because I don't have sufficient fluency in Spanish to do that, nor a translator. Well, there was also a rather gloomy article right under that one in last Friday's Mercury News. Court reverses decision on student's alleged threat. And this is really quite a sad and almost vicious decision by the court, which attacks the rights of students. And here's how this goes. San Francisco AP. Citing the increasing violence in public schools, a federal appeals court reversed itself Thursday and upheld the suspension of a San Diego area high school student who allegedly said she wanted to shoot a counselor. In March, the same court said the words shouldn't have been taken seriously as a threat and didn't justify a suspension. On Thursday, without mentioning the earlier decision, the court reached a different conclusion on a 2-to-1 vote. We recognize that violence is prevalent in public schools today and that teachers and administrators must take threats by students very seriously, said Judge Cynthia Holcomb Hall, who also wrote the earlier ruling. It is for this reason, the judge said, that we cannot ignore the fact that Sarah Lavelle has failed to prove she did not utter the statement that directly and unambiguously threatened physical harm to her guidance counselor. Notice, failed to prove she did not utter the statement. Seems a direct inversion of the standard of innocence, or the presumption of innocence, and the standard of proof required beyond a reasonable doubt to convict. It's the prosecution that's supposed to prove. It's the defense that is simply stands mute and is innocent until proven guilty. Continuing the story. In the previous ruling, also 2-to-1, the court had upheld a federal magistrate's decision to order the Poway Unified School District to erase Lavelle's 3-day suspension. The case dated from February 1993, when Lavelle was a 15-year-old 10th grader at Mount Carmel High School. The court said she was frustrated and irritable after being shuttled for hours between school offices while trying to change her class schedule. Sent back to counselor Linda Suoko, she was expecting the change to be finally approved, only to be told it might not be possible. According to Lavelle, she muttered under her breath, "I'm so angry I could just shoot someone." But Suoko said the girl told her, "If you don't give me the schedule change, I'm going to shoot you." Lavelle immediately apologized. And that's the AP story, probably an abbreviated story, from, again, the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, July 19th. Now, when I was in jail two weeks ago, I heard people say that they wanted to kill the guards, mainly because of some indignity or humiliation that happened. And they didn't say that to the guards, because that would really be a bad move. But it's a natural thing to feel when you are in an institutional setting, whether it be a prison or a jail or a psychiatric ward, and you're being treated abusively. It sounds like she was being treated abusively. And it's even natural for people to say such things in other circumstances, particularly, you know, people who know each other. They get angry with each other. Now, for a court to make such a decision is to put students in a position where I think violence actually becomes more likely rather than less likely. I mean, it didn't sound like she was trying to intimidate this woman. It didn't sound like she was trying to lead an insurrection or instigate violence. It sounded like she was expressing frustration. Of course, I don't know the case. And indeed, that's how the court initially ruled the case. Then suddenly it turns around with no explanation and completely reverses its position, and again reverses the presumption of innocence. It's a way of giving teachers this kind of absolute power and authority, which in a way is quite counterproductive, because the real power that teachers had, and I saw this as well in jail, by the way, there were a few teachers who volunteered their time, who were most effective, were those who constantly appealed to the convicts in terms of interesting them in what was going on, not in threatening them. Now, there was a lot of threatening that got done by guards, and there was some controlling and threatening that got done by teachers, kind of as a last resort. But the main actions that were used by the most effective teacher, a woman named Tiana, who taught a creative writing course that I went to. It's actually a creative babysitting of convicts course, really. She didn't get too much creative writing done, but she was most effective because she was constantly relating to each individual person in the room. She got people to write amazing things about their experiences, mostly about drive-by shootings and things like that, but still, personal experiences that these men had had, and eloquently and actually described with some brilliance, not in terms of publishable material, but in terms of using images that were very dazzling. Perhaps at a future show, I'll dig into my notebook and kind of pass on some of these expressions to you, but it was, as I said, I don't think that the real power of authorities lies not in their ultimate ability to throw you out or suspend you or put you down, but in their ability to communicate with you and to involve you in the educational process. And of course, the key here is class size and training and all kinds of things. Whether the class is voluntary, that was the big problem we had in jail. None of the classes were voluntary. The classes had been voluntary and very effective, but then the prison authorities decided they wanted to make money by making the classes mandatory. And in so doing, everybody had to come whether they wanted to or not. And of course, you got all kinds of behavior problems and people who didn't want to be there. And it was it's like sending someone to NA or AA who doesn't want to go. It's ridiculous. But if it makes money for the authorities, and of course that's the whole reason for the prison system, at least it seems to be now, it's a huge machine for generating more funds to build more prisons, to elect more politicians, to hire more prison guards, to confiscate more drugs and drug money, to build more police departments and fund more police officers. It goes on and on and on. I mean, it's a juggernaut. It's a juggernaut. And in accord with that juggernaut, on the same page of this Mercury News, we have yet another story about the Three Strikes Law, which, as you know or you may not know, was somewhat weakened by a court decision about the time I first got into jail in late June. And here's a story. Senator accused of playing games with three strikes. Lockyer alleges that Hurt doesn't care about policy solving problems, or about policy or solving problems. The Senate's top Democrat, that's the state Senate, accused his Republican counterpart Thursday of recklessly injecting politics into the debate over three strikes, you're out legislation, and predicted the tactic wouldn't sell to voters. The senator doesn't care about policy, doesn't care about solving problems, said Senate President Pro Tem Bill Lockyer, referring to Senate Minority Leader Rob Hurt, Republican of Garden Grove. He's essentially a political animal, Lockyer said, and most of his commentary about this issue is about what he thinks is politically smart. Well, anyone who reads that stuff probably quickly understands that this sort of name-calling, mischaracterizations are not a sensible way to solve public policy problems. Hurt and other Republican leaders sharply criticized Lockyer and other Senate Democrats on Tuesday after the Senate Criminal Procedure Committee rejected a Hurt bill that would have limited judges' ability to disregard three-strike sentencing requirements. The Three Strikes Law, passed by lawmakers and voters in 1994, classifies a long list of felonies as strikes and requires lengthy prison sentences for defendants with two or three strikes. Critics complain that the measure has resulted in some defendants getting inappropriately long sentences of 25 years to life for relatively minor offenses, like stealing pizza, for instance. Critics complain that the measure has resulted in some defendants... Oops, I'm repeating myself, but I guess they repeated this one like 70,000, or is it 20,000 times in the last two or three years, or the last 2 years, since this measure was passed. Hurt charged that the Criminal Procedure Committee vote showed that Senate Democrats were undoubtedly more concerned with the well-being of rapists, murderers, and child molesters than they are with their victims. Senator Lockyer obviously has no intention of allowing my bill to pass. Again, Hurt's bill is a bill that says that the judge's decision, that the judges do have the discretion to say, well, this third strike isn't a strike. We're not going to send him to jail for life for, stealing pizza. Sorry, try again. Maybe 5 years for pizza, but not 40 years. I mean, we don't want to turn this into geriatric wards unnecessarily. However, of course, the basis on which this was done was to uphold judicial authority and to show, because the prosecutor has the power to say, don't make this last strike a third strike. But under the law, the Three Strikes Law, the judge did not. And the judge said, you can't do that. You can't tell prosecutors that they can make these kinds of decisions and then tell judges they can't overrule them. It essentially gives the power to people like Art Danner and takes it out of the hands of his trusted lieutenants who are on the court. I mean, we've got to keep things at least looking good. I mean, we all know that the Santa Cruz courts are stacked with DA judges, no question, but let's at least keep things looking nice and have the judges make these kinds of decisions. Anyway, Lockyer, who's the Democratic head of the Senate in the state here, the state Senate in Sacramento, said Democrats would try to pass a different three strikes bill that would limit judges' discretion somewhat and drop petty theft and bad check writing from the list of strikes. Now, the man who was one jail cell over from me, he was really a sweet guy. He'd been assaulted in San Francisco. He was convicted in Seattle for kiting checks, kiting his girlfriend's checks. He got angry with her, and he wrote 5 bad checks. So they put him, I think he gave him a couple years in jail, and they gave him some probation, and he couldn't stand it in Washington, so he broke his probation and came south. He wasn't actually, his family lives here in California, I believe. And then as he went through San Francisco, he was assaulted, and he was up for a charge. He apparently came running into a donut shop covered with blood, and the police report says he was demanding that he be given donuts or he was going to kill people if he wasn't given donuts. I talked to this guy every day for 30 days and spent hours with him, and as far as I can judge, there's not a violent bone on the guy's body. I saw some violence in jail too. It wasn't like, you know, everybody's Mr. Nice Guy in there. But in essence, what happened was he was in the hospital with ribs broken. He couldn't remember. He's an alcoholic, so there's that consideration. But the point is, they wanted to give him more strikes for allegedly he had a little pen knife that he had on him, and it's illegal as a it's a parole violation to carry a pen knife. You see, just as it's a parole violation to leave the state. And by the way, I, for example, am a parolee at the moment. I don't have the same kind of restrictions on me. I left jail last week, and the only agreement I made was, one, to call in, and two, to recognize that if I'm arrested, I may be sent back. And I then immediately walked out and served food and said, good, arrest me. And they said, no way. And I said, obviously. And we left that issue behind us for the moment. Still, we're talking 3 strikes here. We're talking the issue of what's going to happen in the state Senate and in the state assembly when the legislature returns from recess. And the Democrats are saying, oh yeah, we'll beef up 3 strikes or more, but what we won't do is we won't allow petty theft and bad check writing to be on that list of strikes. Quote, we want a constitutional, affordable, and sensible 3 strikes law, said Lockyer, who's the head of the Democratic Senate. Among other things, the Democrats' measure would bar judges and prosecutors from disregarding strikes if the previous offense involved child molestation or the current offense was violent. So they're trying to show how tough on crime they are. And it would also require that the defendant be free from custody for at least 6 years for a previous violent offense or at least 3 years for a serious offense before the judge could waive strikes. So, for instance, a parole violation could be the basis of a strike. And most of the people in my jail, County Jail 8, the pod I was on, F pod, were parole violators. They had done something like had contact with police. If you're on parole, if you get arrested in any way, that's the basis for a violation, even if you're completely falsely arrested. It's incredible. It's an incredible racket. And in the studio with me, I have the one of the more incredible people of Santa Cruz, who just slipped in here, a city council candidate, a Green Party stalwart, and possibly a man who will be on the beach tonight at the networking party, which is happening from 7 to 10 at the Crow's Nest, 7th Avenue. David Mittensilva. Hi, David.
Hi, Robert. It's good to see you here. When you called me this morning, I just couldn't believe, you know, you're here. Wow. I've been sitting now for like 30 days, numb. Why can't I get this man a lawyer? Why can't I do something about it? I'm powerless. This is awful. And here you are, and it really, really is good to see you. Yeah. I mean, Robert's one of the better people, if not one of the best people in town.
Certainly the best.
Well, the best in a robe.
Yes, indeed.
And
you're
the best
in a blanket, as I was saying earlier.
I try with my blanket, yeah.
Well, David, you have had the temerity to put your papers in for running for the silly council or the shitty council. What do they call it? The city council, that's what it is, here in Santa Cruz, which, of course, is the dustbin of all our hopes. Why are you doing this?
Well, people kept asking me and asking me and asking me, and I figured, oh, well, you know, somebody else will step forward, and nobody else stepped forward that I consider viable or really concerned with the problems of the, I think, almost psychological problems, you know, psychopolitical problems that abound in the city council, with them not being able to serve people and them being totally an organization that's on the reaction mode, always responding to the planning commissioner, responding to the city manager, and never being able to put forward any kind of vision or dream themselves. But the good ones on the city council, and I number them only in about 2, being Celia Scott and most of the time Catherine Byers in her heart, is there. But I see the people that are actually trying to do good in the council mostly in a defensive mode, and I want to try to, you know, shift the mindset and blow that apart. I intend to spend a good part of my campaign attacking what's wrong with the city manager relationship to the city council and the planning commission. Are they ombudsmen for developers? Is the downtown commission the echo of the downtown association? Are they ombudsmen for the rich who control the downtown association? Where the small shops and the shops down in Southern Pacific and the homeless people and anybody that's in their way for doing this great recovery plan from the earthquake, you know, has to be shoved aside. I want to try to stop. I'm going to stop that. You know, that's got that mindset has to shift, and that's sort of what I'm about. Now, as far as me doing it, well, I'm going to be very unique. You know, what somebody said was asking me once about issues, and I said, well, I am an issue. You know, and I intend to remain an issue in this campaign.
Well, hopefully so. The downtown association, the DTA, is. Reportedly had a lot of power, and I know that Celine Marie Pascal, who did a study of homelessness and the perception of homelessness around the downtown ordinances passed 2 years ago by the City Council, credited the power of the Downtown Association in getting previously liberal leftist individuals like Scott Kennedy, who co-founded the Resource Center for Nonviolence, was mayor that year and is now a City Council member, to put aside his principles and, for example, pass laws that make it a crime punishable by 6 months in jail to ask for spare change or anything of value, as the law puts it, twice within a month after dark or from a seated position or in a group of three or 50 feet from an instateller or any change distributing machine.
And they're adding change with distributing machines as we speak. There was a debate recently in City Council. Excuse me if I sound funny. I don't usually sound like this. I have a cold. My first cold in 2 years. I think that's really great.
Get rid of that cold.
For someone with a you know, HIV positive, I think to have only one cold in 2 years, I think I'm kicking ass pretty well.
Cool.
So where were we?
You were talking about a change machine that goes in.
Yeah, you know, they actually had a schedule brought to them from, again, I guess the Planning Commission, or was it a traffic, I don't know how, which
particular... Downtown Commission, actually.
Downtown Commission.
Which meets, by the way, on Thursday of this
thank
week.
Thank you. Yeah.
If you're interested in going to the Downtown Commission, maybe you'll be going there, David.
I think it's a good possibility, yes.
It's at 1 o'clock, and it's in City Council Chambers, and it's Thursday, July 25th. One and the same day that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has its monthly board of directors meeting at 4 o'clock at Garfield Park Church. I'm sorry, but you were speaking about.
Yeah,
that
would be a good double hitter. Right. So anyway, like for, you know, $10,000, they can put in a coin machine. Well, they had plans to sparse these coin machines out into areas that really weren't required, weren't necessary by any business or any parking situation, but really could be apparently seen to be spaced out to prevent homeless people from being anywhere near there, anybody that might panhandle from being anywhere near there. And the way things are going, anybody that looked like they might be the kind of person that might panhandle would be subject to a citation or arrest just by being near one of those coin machines. We managed to do some persuading and turn that back around with the help of Catherine Byers. That ended up being one
instead of three.
They were going to go with three, yeah. Three would have spaced out with what they already had. So, but still, you know, that kind of compromise shouldn't even have to be made, because that kind of thing should not even be brought to the City Council. The people that work for the city should know what kind of city this is. That's one of the main things of my campaign, is like, I want, you know, our city government to know what kind of city this is. And what kind of city this is a diverse, various cultures, various peoples, various lifestyles. And this is what has made Santa Cruz attractive in the past, and this is what we need to regain again. This shock of recovering from the earthquake and blaming the homeless for the slow down in business, and then allowing you know, big corporations to move in on Pacific Avenue. It's been a big mistake. If I was on the City Council, I would never allow that to happen, because those people, they take the money out of this community, and soon as there's a hard time, that Santa Cruz Theater will close and evacuate, and then we have to try to fill it ourselves. We're left hold the bag. That's the way transnational corporations and big corporations treat downtowns. We have to remember Pacific Avenue is our Main Street, and Main Street USA is one of the, trying to save Main Street USA is one of the big fights in this country. Jerry Brown's been talking about it. Ralph Nader talks about it. It's what we. It's one of the big fights we have to do. If it means tackling some of the our own rich elite, the socialists, socialites, then we're going to have to do that.
Hey, I'd love to hear it. I'd also like to see some analysis of the big owners here. Looks like we have a kitty is coming to the studio here.
What do you have to say for yourself?
Catting around here in the studio. I'd love to see an analysis of the Boardwalk owners, I guess Canfield, the other large developers downtown, Rittenhouse. I saw old Louis the other day kind of lurking around, actually just sort of joshing with Louis Rittenhouse, joshing with city council staff. Louis was the man who made the kind of candid comment to Linda the Lark Edwards back in 1994 when Linda talked about homeless people being beaten up by troll busters. Louis kind of looked at Linda and said, "Linda, don't you think maybe they were trying to give that man a message?" Yeah, you know, Louis was a gargoyle in his political position, but he was an out front gargoyle, and I've always respected him for that. He's never, however, invited me to any parties, which I've always regretted. He told me I was not on his social list.
Tell you the truth, you know, I've been in politics for some sick reason or other since 1961, when John Kennedy ran for president, and I've always been involved in political campaigns, and I've been involved in some city management and some agencies, you know, across the state. But one thing that always seems true is that when it comes to who you can trust, it's actually your arch conservative, you know, normally be considered enemies, that are actually most up front. It's the liberals who have friends who own architectural firms that end up voting for cutting down redwood trees.
Really? Well, you know, I tend to agree with that. I think that question regarding your campaign, I've always scoffed at people running for city council.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, right.
City
council.
What a fool.
You dolt. Fool. Bumpkin. Particularly, for example, Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, who may be slipping in here in the next few minutes.
She's, oh, great. Can I get her endorsement live on the air?
Who knows? She endorsed Scott Kennedy last time. Thank you, Lighthouse Linda. Believing, of course, that she could somehow modify Kennedy's... I'm not sure what she believed, but we separated on this issue. She was running for city council in 1992, and also facing trial for an occupation of the Heiner House with the, I guess, Bag Ladies Revolt, a group that split off from the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless to try to secure some decent, affordable housing for, in this case, I guess it was single mothers, or actually not single, mothers with families. This building was being kind of preserved and not used and had been sitting around for 3 years since the earthquake. And they actually, Linda and her protest had some impact on how that building was finally used, but she was going to be tried by Art Danner, and they decided wisely to drop the charges. She was running for city council at the same time, and I told her she was wasting her energy running for city council unless she could really use these forums to get the issues out, because I thought she didn't have a... what would one say? She'd have a chance in hell, or a chance in Santa Cruz to, well, that's a nasty way to put it. Let's say she didn't have a chance, she'd had no chance of getting into the city council, and the idea that she was likely to kind of just get lost in the shuffle and not be, but she did bring up some issues. And I'm wondering, at the same time as you're running for city council, I think really an important aspect of all this is to start establishing alternate institutions. I know that's often, you know, kind of the Leninist line, let's have some Soviets at the same time as they have their Congress. But we really need we have, of course, the city council forums that you'll be speaking at in this upcoming time. But what about institutions that will endure beyond that? I mean, frankly, I don't think you're going to win. And I'm wondering, once you've lost, is it just sort of, you know, I mean, what are we building toward with this campaign?
Well, first of all, I am going to win.
Yeah.
Secondly, the way I'm going to win is by building alternative organizations, institutions. My campaign, not unlike the image, the vision that Craig Coffin has for his state senate campaign, which I think is going to surprise a lot of people, is a people's campaign based from the bottom up. Anyone that wants to volunteer for my campaign, you can call the Green Party office, 459-0199.
Repeat that.
459-0199. And the first thing you need to do is you need to find out what precinct you're in, and you need to get a couple master copies of the literature that we have, and make some copies if you can. We'll assist you if you can't, and work your own precinct. I think the concept of working your own precinct, and once having everybody that's in the campaign having worked their own precinct, then coming together for little congresses, little meetings, powwows, if you will, I think is a beginning of the neighborhoods and the neighbors and the people actually seizing power. Let's face it, 70% of the people don't vote in the United States, and now Santa Cruz County is catching up very fast. It's something like 64% of the people in Santa Cruz County aren't voting. That's not Santa Cruz. You know, this is, you know, you call it hell, I call it paradise lost. And I think we need to regain the sense of sanctuary that we had both politically, culturally, naturally. And the way we need to do that is through this kind of a campaign where we start from the precinct level. Everybody that has any feelings for the things that I'm talking about needs to go and talk to their neighbors. And that's a little rough first step, but that first step will make for a very, very sound foundation. And then we'll be able to have real neighborhood associations that can meet in a Congress that approve or disapprove the mayor once a year, approve or disapprove the budget once a year. This is my concept. Maybe it's visionary and a little too far in the future, but the way to build it is by precinct to precinct.
Hmm. Well, the reason I'm certainly, nothing could please me more than to see you get elected, and I certainly will endorse you, I imagine, if I'm going to endorse anybody. I just remember the 1994 election when Scott Kennedy was running. He had, of course, fatally compromised himself, even with many peace activists, by his Ban the Beggars stuff and his anti-homeless downtown ordinances, and then running this preposterous Gandhi celebration at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, being the organizer of the 125th or the 100th anniversary or some such thing of Gandhi's birth. And he continues to mention Gandhi. He mentions Gandhi in a letter to me in the jail. And he's completely blinded by his political situation, it seems to me. But anyway, we tried to defeat him. I was putting out, of course, it was pretty much a one-man effort in this respect in terms of, I didn't see a lot of other action around that. But, he came in, I think he came in third, but
he did well.
He did well. He did substantially better than almost any of the other candidates. And that's how it is. The three at the top generally get it, and the ones at the bottom just get a trickle of the votes. How can the university get the message that Rotkin is lying to them?